Movies where food and cooking is a major theme, with an emphasis on the connections between food and love, have become almost a unique cinematic genre in recent years. The latest is a sumptuous new Italian film called I Am Love, which stars Tilda Swinton as the Russian-born wife of a wealthy Italian businessman who falls in love with a young chef. It's directed by Luca Guadagnino, and it opens this Friday at the Lincoln Plaza and Sunshine Cinemas. I'm very pleased to welcome Tilda Swinton back to our show, and Luca Guadagnino here for the first time. Hi.
Hello.
And Tilda, isn't this the third film the two of you have made together?
It feels like the 90th, but I suppose it's only the third, isn't it?
Yeah. But the first feature.
No, it's not. We did make a feature film which not that many people have ever seen about 11 years ago. And I think it was when we were cutting that film that we started talking about this film.
11 years?
Yeah.
So this film is 11 years in the making?
In the process of elaborating it and desiring it and conceiving it and then also in the making, yeah.
What is it about Tilda that made you want to pursue her as your leading lady way back when?
Because I think that the Tilda has an amazing quality of generosity and passion to it, to the way she is a filmmaker. So,
Although you didn't know until you worked with her.
I mean, you can tell from what she did before.
Because you often are quite brave in your performances. I don't know what other word to use.
Yeah, I don't quite understand what that means. I think one man's bravery is another man's idleness.
In this film, you play Emma Reki, who was born in Russia but has married into a wealthy family in Milan. How did you find that character? Did you have to create a backstory for her?
Well, we evolved the whole film together over this very, very sort of graceful 11 years that we've described. And frankly, most of the films I've ever made have felt as if they've taken that length of time to make. I don't think it's particularly rare for a film to take that length of time. But we started with the idea, when we started to think about the story, we started with the idea of the revolution of love in the life of a woman who I might play. And we started thinking about a woman. It was a very organic business, and it wasn't something that we necessarily had to talk to each other about. She was somebody who probably came out of the ether inspired by Flaubert or Tolstoy, and also, you know, people like Alida Valli in Senso and Catherine Deneuve in Belle du Jour.
In fact, this film reminds me as much as anything of the Visconti film Senso, because it has something of an operatic feel to it. In that case, I think it was Mahler who was the composer. And in this case, you actually have your own composer, John Adams. We opened with a little bit of music from the score.
He's
composed operas himself.
Indeed, but I mean, the idea of him being referred to as our own composer is
it's fantastic.
His famous opera is Nixon in China. And did you know that when did you realize you thought that not just food but also music would be an important component?
I always been not interested in original scores for movies. And I'm of the school of who thinks that there is such an amazing amount of creations there, out there, from history, that can inspire the movie and can guide, in a way, your ideas. That is fantastic. And I remember in 2005, I've been given a disc of a CD of John Adams by a friend as a present for my birthday. It was Naive and Sentimental Music. And which I didn't know anything. I didn't know anything about John Adams. And I put the CD, and the second this music came out from the speakers, I felt that was the sound, the voice for I Am Love. And so basically I started to research, buy, distribute, and share with Tilda. And it was 2005. And from that moment, from that day, I have to say something. John Adams' music helped very much me to heal a very difficult moment of my life when my father got a very severe heart operation. And this was the first time in my family, in my life, something so dramatic came in. You know, you have to face the death and the responsibility and how you change your role as a child and then you become not anymore a son. And his music was very strong and very helpful in that moment.
So this thing has taken 11 years, but layer upon layer over those years. In this film, Tilda, your character only speaks Italian.
And Russian.
Are you comfortable speaking those languages?
I'm more comfortable speaking Russian, I have to confess. Speaking Italian is still a great challenge to me, but I had the grace to not have to sound like a genuine Italian. That was my get out. I could sound like an alien.
Because the Russian background gives you a less than perfect
Italian
accent. I
can only ever speak Italian with a Russian accent for the rest of my life.
Was that scene where someone is speaking in English and you require a translator an inside joke?
Yes, it was a sort of Bruno moment, or Borat rather, I would say, of me saying yes.
In the old days, Luca, of Italian cinema, you would just have had someone dub in Tilda's voice. Burt Lancaster speaks perfect Italian in any number of films.
Yeah, and Farley Granger in Senza, too.
That's no longer happening in Italian films? That whole thing has been eliminated?
I would say yes, and it's not a bad thing. It's not a completely bad thing. I think that what these films taught me, and all of us, it's that there are no boundaries to cinema and to filmmaking and to approach stories. If you think of Burt Lancaster being a Sicilian aristocrat in a Visconti movie, and there is a funny little episode of Burt Lancaster saying how he'd understood to play this role of the aristocrat in the Leopard. He said, "I only watched Lucchino and I replicated his gestures." So, you know, there is no boundaries.
But I think the whole question of language in cinema is a very particular thing. And what we were dealing with was someone who was not fluent. We were dealing with someone who was constantly sort of working with a language that wasn't her own. She was, inarticulacy is in a way the subject of the film. So to dub me into a real Italian would not have been the point. We could use my own kind of alien status, if you like, to effect. But then I'm very often, very rarely do I work in my own language, to be honest. I occasionally impersonate American people, and then I'm way out of my own language.
When we first see Emma, she's organizing a birthday dinner for her father-in-law, played by somebody who reminds us of Antonioni, in fact. And we meet the entire family almost en masse. It's a bit bewildering at first. And although she's been a member of this family for decades and has grown children, we get the feeling that Emma still sees herself, at least partly, as an outsider.
I don't think there's any way of not feeling like an outsider if you haven't been born into that kind of milieu. And even her daughter, who has been born in that milieu, is also an outsider. She's an artist. And I think to be born an artist in that kind of milieu, which doesn't necessarily foster artists in a particularly sympathetic way, is also something that we wanted to look at.
Now, look, there was an article in the Times about this being a melodrama, and there was talk about Hitchcock and Cirque being inspirations. I get the sense of Visconti and Antonioni may even be more. But you have done all sorts of things to undermine the melodrama, haven't you? You have discontinuity in narration at times. You set us up for a big melodramatic scene, and then you cut, and we go from what could be a really powerful problem to Emma in her kitchen in Milan as though nothing ever happened.
It's life, and it's. I think it has to do with eroticism. You have to know how to stop and then to go back to it. I think it's like that. For me, it's like that.
Well, does it come out of your experience in experimental films?
Well, I think it does come out from our attitude to be creative and to be taking risks and to enjoy. It's fun, you know? It's really something. The second you step into the moment in which you do things automatically, it's over.
The film is visually stunning with these gorgeous landscapes and lots of detailed shots of the palatial Recchi family home. Did you find a real mansion in Milan?
Yes. Yes, yes. That was a very long, long, another long layer for this movie. I was looking for houses and houses in books. I was ready to shoot in countryside and then to match with shots outside in the streets of Milano. And then after 4 years of books of mansions, I found this palazzo, villa. It's a villa, Villa Necchi Campiglio, that I didn't know. It's in the center of Milan. And then when I went into the house for the first time, I was like, oh my God. And I remember distinctively when you came to Milano to see the house the first time. It's really something impressive. It's
did they even own all of those paintings, the Mirandis and such? Or?
No, that was a very, you know, they have a great collection, but Francesca Balestra di Mottola, the glorious production designer of this movie, she made the film look as if the house, it's a really impressive house, but it's also a place where people live. And all the paintings are fake because the insurance would have been impossible to embrace.
Well, Tilda, as Emma, you get to wear some stunning outfits. and they tell us something about her. We understand her to some degree through her clothes.
I think of her as an avatar. You know, she comes from one circumscribed environment. She's not only born in Russia, she's born at a time which means she's born into Soviet Russia. So when she leaves, we wanted to make her come from a place that when this revolution happens in her life, she can't go back there. She has to keep going. She has to keep growing forward. And so she comes from a world that's really folded up behind her, doesn't actually exist anymore. And she comes into, I would suggest, is even maybe more a circumscribed environment, this milieu, where she has to learn to literally talk the talk and walk the walk and disguises herself. And to a certain extent, there is a sense of uniform. We needed her to have a kind of very clear uniform that she could kind of, in a way, be lost inside. And we worked with the wonderful Raf Simons, who is the designer of the House of Jill Sander, and his team at Jill Sander made this very expressive wardrobe for her, so, which kind of morphs in terms of color and shape throughout the film.
Do you get to keep those dresses?
They're a fantastic pair of orange trousers that I was able to wear for the last 2 years, but now the film's coming out, I have to stop wearing them.
Emma falls in love with this young chef named Antonio, who happens to be her son's best friend. Well, although she doesn't seem to be the kind of woman who makes a habit of running around with younger men, why does she choose this moment in her life to throw caution to the winds?
I'm not sure that these moments are chosen. I think they choose you, really. I think there's this idea that very often assaults people, that one can resist change or even choose it. And our attitude is very much that it's inevitable and that really transformation is all we have. And somehow she has been morphing all the time, even though she was in this position of being a mother, bringing up children who were morphing. She maybe got into the habit, as mothers very often do, of thinking that they're not changing or that they're not up for change.
There's a scene where Emma is lunching at Antonio's family's restaurant, and we see her transported while eating a dish of prawns. And many people see this as a pivotal moment in the film because she's, to some degree, being seduced as much by the food as she is by the person who made the food. Was that one of the things that you wanted to get across with this?
One of the changing moments of my life was when I read this book by Paul Bocuse, the great French chef in Lyon. He's still alive. When I was like 10 years old, and he wrote this preface, and he said, when you cook, you have to cook loving the person you are cooking for. It's love that drives you to become a good chef. And which means I learned a lesson that to cook is to communicate, to say something. There is a narration in a dish. There is a really, really long storytelling there. And there is a dialogue. And I think, and it's also very intimate because I cook myself and I know that it can be very intimate to cook something for someone else. And so I think that she's open. She's open to the dialogue. And because it's a very intense language, the language that Antonio speaks, she has that moment, which we think it's our homage to other masters of cinema, the great Pixar people and Ratatouille.
Ratatouille. You were here 10 years ago or so to talk about Orlando, a film that was based on the Virginia Woolf novel Sally Potter directed. And it's being re-released now.
It is. I think it was longer than that, actually, Leonard. But yes, it's being...
Well, I'd like to think that we're younger than we may be.
400 years ago it was, I think, at least.
But why now?
Because finally Sony Pictures Classics are doing it. We've been asking them to do it for years, or suggesting, rather, that they do it for years. And I'm so happy that they're doing it now.
And somebody's doing a retrospective of Sally Potter's films as well.
I'm sure they do them all the time.
Well, I mean, there's one, I think, coming up at the Walter Reed.
I believe it. I didn't know that, but yeah. It's really as fresh as the day it was made, if not fresher, Orlando. We presented it recently in London, and it's really worth going to see on the big screen.
Meanwhile, we have this film opening this Friday, the 18th, at the Sunshine Cinema and Lincoln Plaza Cinemas. And Gabriel Fossetti died during the making of the film?
No.
Oh, he's still alive?
No.
Oh, he only dies as a character.
He dies as a character, yes. Through the editing. He disappears. No. He was very well.
Yeah. Mm.
Well,
I love him.
It's wonderful seeing him after admiring him as a young man. He's still a wonderful actor as an older man. My great thanks to the two of you, Tilda Swinton and Luca Guadagnino, for coming by to talk about I Am Love, which, as I said, opens at the Lincoln Plaza and Sunshine Cinemas this Friday. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Leonard.